This is another lecture on healthcare, and I call the topic Dollars and Decisions. The point of the lecture is that there really is something for economics to contribute in the healthcare field. Now, let's start with something that's known as the law of demand. You may have heard about the law of supply and demand. Well, the law of demand says that if the price of something goes up, people buy less of it. So people respond to higher prices by consuming less of something. So a corollary to that law of demand is that if healthcare is quote unquote free, that is people don't get the sense that they're paying for it themselves, but it's paid for by third parties such as insurance, then people will consume too much of it. And so that is a concern that economists would have about insurance, especially insurance that pays for everything, comprehensive insurance. Something like catastrophic insurance, where the consumer pays a large share up to a deductible, would be less of a concern in that regard. A lot of times people resent or reject that economic view of healthcare. One objection people raise is that people don't like to go to the doctor, the dentist, the hospital, etc. So, people will scornfully say, economists are afraid that if your health insurance is too good, you'll get too much health care. But who would check themselves into the hospital just for the fun of it? And here's what economists would say to counter that. They would say, yes, they would call these the reasons that you don't like to go to the doctor, the dentist, or the hospital, they would call these non-monetary costs. And the non-monetary costs are time and discomfort. That is, it takes time to go to the doctor or so on. If you want to use economic jargon, there's an opportunity cost of going to the doctor. You could be doing something more pleasant, and or you could be going to work or whatever. The other non-monetary cost is discomfort. Getting your teeth cleaned is uncomfortable, at least if you're my age and your gums are sensitive. Some of the things that the doctor does are unpleasant. Some of the tests are unpleasant, and so on. So there are non-monetary costs involved in healthcare, and economists would say absolutely those are there. And what that means is that people won't go completely berserk if they're offered free health care. You're not going to get run out and get a colonoscopy 3 times a week just because their doctors are running a special on colonoscopies. But even though there are non-monetary costs, that doesn't mean you would throw out cost-benefit analysis out the window. In fact, what economists would say is that what you should do is look at the benefits of healthcare, the benefit of going to the doctor, the benefit of having a test done or whatever, and that should be measured against the monetary and the non-monetary costs of healthcare. So you could have a situation in which the benefit is greater than the monetary cost, but it's not worth getting the treatment because if you throw in the non-monetary costs and combine the non-monetary costs and the monetary costs, that's greater than the benefit. And economists would be perfectly happy with saying that whenever the benefits are not greater than the monetary and non-monetary costs, you shouldn't have the care. So the fact that people don't like going to the doctor or the dentist or the hospital, it does restrain their demand, but it should restrain their demand for health care, and it does not necessarily restrain their demand enough to justify making health care free to them. The second objection that people have to taking an economic view of health care is people say, well, you don't have a choice about health care. You either need it or you don't. And certainly that's true of some forms of health care, some situations. If you have a heart attack, you obviously need health care. If you break your arm, obviously you need health care. But it turns out there are many other areas that I call the gray area of medicine. That is, you could say if it were just black and white, it would be either there's unnecessary care, such as something that might be foisted on you by a doctor who just wants to collect a fee, or there's necessary care. So that would be the black and white view of it. But the gray area includes a lot of healthcare nowadays. There are a lot of procedures that are done that are kind of on a precautionary basis. Like if you go to a doctor with back pain, often they'll order an MRI. Yet most doctors will tell you that most of the time, an MRI does nothing in terms of altering the treatment plan. That is, if you have back pain, chances are that ultimately the treatment's going to involve rest and physical therapy. That is, resting your back and then getting physical therapy. And that will be true whether the MRI shows a disc problem, for example, or not. So the MRI is kind of a waste of everyone's time. It's just kind of a way of protecting the physician, sometimes just sort of making the patient feel like the doctor's doing something. So that's something that might fall in the gray area. It does occasionally help, but probably on average the benefit is not worth the cost. Another example is frequent follow-ups with cardiologists. It turns out that the frequency with which people follow up with cardiologists is more a function of what the cardiologist schedules look like. That is, if the cardiologist can't fit you in except once every 6 months or once a year after some heart event, then that's how often your follow-ups will be. Whereas if the cardiologists in your area have relatively open schedules where they can see you once a month or once every 2 months, then that's how often they'll see you. No one's ever sat down and determined what's a cost-effective amount of times you should be, or frequency with which you should be followed up with a cardiologist. And there are lots of other things, like when does somebody get referred to a dermatologist or not? When do they get referred to a gastroenterologist or not? And there's no, that's in a gray area where people don't know necessarily that those are cost-effective referrals. Another instance, getting a new pair of eyeglasses. It could be that it's absolutely necessary, you can't see without them, or you couldn't get a driver's license without them, but often people will get a new pair of glasses when they get a slight prescription change, or when they don't like the looks of their frames anymore, or something like that. So getting a new pair of eyeglasses can be in the gray area. And there are treatments for all sorts of ailments that weren't considered treatable ailments before. 50 years ago, they're probably, depression wasn't something that people were treated for. More recently, shyness is now considered something that could be a treatable illness. Being short just a few years ago became something that could be a treatable illness. If you were in the bottom 1% or 5% for height, you can be you can take growth hormones for that. It used to be that growth hormones, if they were for anybody, were for people with clear abnormalities. But now, just being in the bottom 5% of height is considered justification for taking them. Cosmetic surgery, something else where probably belongs in the gray area. It's obviously not necessary, at least in a lot of cases, and yet it's something that is classified as healthcare. So overall, when the question is there a need to use economics in making healthcare decisions, economists say yes. Well, naturally we would, because we believe that there is this large gray area where benefits and costs have to be weighed against each other. It isn't just an either-or choice, and it isn't the case that you can count on people to make the right choice just because they don't like going to the doctor or the dentist or whatever. So we say that economic cost-benefit calculations should be involved in making healthcare decisions. And so how do you go about doing that? First thing you have to do is place a dollar value on the benefit that someone gets from, let's say, an extra year of life, or from doing without pain or discomfort or something like that. So, one estimate is, is to value an additional year of good quality life at $100,000. That's a ballpark estimate that is used. I won't go into how economists try to estimate that. I'm not myself entirely bought into that method of estimation, but it's a reasonable number arrived at with some reasonable thinking. But then you also, because so, a lot of healthcare isn't life or death, you have to think in terms of what's the dollar value of pain reduction, what's the dollar value of better eyesight, things like that. Right, so that's one hurdle in doing economic analysis. Now, you realize if people were making their own healthcare decisions and spending their own money, then they would be implicitly making those decisions. If somebody says, yes, I do want to have this, painful cyst removed, then they're saying, that's how much I value the pain reduction. I value it so much that I'm willing to pay the cost. If people were paying for their own medical procedures, then they would be doing cost-benefit analysis of this sort. Okay, so the first thing is we have to have a dollar value of the benefit. The next thing we have to think about is the probability of the benefit, because a lot of medical procedures may not have a benefit. For example, a diagnostic test, whether it has a benefit depends on whether it finds something. And whether what it finds is something that is different than what was expected, and so it alters the treatment plan. So, getting a diagnostic test like an MRI or going to a specialist is going to make a difference, it has to, first of all, make a difference in the treatment plan, and then the treatment plan has to make a difference in terms of the outcome. And both of those are probabilistic. There is a probability that the procedure won't make, the diagnostic procedure won't make a difference in the treatment plan. There's a probability that the treatment plan won't make a difference in the result. So you have to bring probability into the calculation of costs and benefits. Then the next point is that you need to compare alternatives, because sometimes a cheaper approach will be almost as effective, and that in turn makes a more expensive approach actually not cost effective. So let me go through an example. Routine colonoscopy, that's a procedure where a specialist will examine your colon by means of a scope. By routine colonoscopy or screening colonoscopy, I mean, it's something where they don't have a strong reason for suspecting anything, but once you reach the age of 50, it is now recommended that you be screened about every 5 years, maybe every 10 years, for colon cancer. And the reason is, first of all, a huge portion of the population is susceptible to that. That is 6%. I think colon cancer is the third largest cancer killer. And again, 6% of the population is susceptible to it. that's a reason to try to screen it out. And the other key thing is that routine colonoscopy is very effective. It can prevent 80% of colon cancer because colon cancer starts with these precancerous polyps. And with a routine colonoscopy, they will find, and if they find any, remove precancerous polyps, and that has been shown to prevent something like 80% of all colon cancer. So from a medical perspective, this routine colonoscopy looks very powerful. Well, let's try to look at it in terms of cost-benefit analysis. Suppose it extends life by 5 years. And the reason I would use a relatively small estimate of extending life by 5 years is that colon cancer itself is a relatively slow killer. Even if you get it, it would probably only take a few years off of your life. So if it takes 5 years of life, then at $100,000, it's worth $500,000, this screening. Of course, the screen only works 80% of the time, so you would mark that down to $400,000. Then you have to take into account the fact that 94% of the people would never get colon cancer anyway. So we just multiply the 400,000 by the 6% who might get colon cancer, and that's a $24,000 benefit. And of course, to get all this benefit, you have to be screened, every 5 years, let's say between age 50 and 70. So that would be five screenings. At $1,500 a screening, would be $7,500. Well, that still seems worth it because of the huge benefit, the benefit of $24,000. However, you have to be concerned that there may be some low-cost alternatives. There are other tests which are not as effective at preventing colon cancer as routine colonoscopy, but they can certainly rule it out in a large number of cases, and they cost a lot less. So if you had everybody with this low-cost alternative, using these low-cost alternatives, then the additional benefit that they would get out of colonoscopy probably would not be enough to match the cost. Because in addition, I guess I should point out that in addition to the out-of-pocket cost, colonoscopy takes you out of commission for about 2.5 days. You spend about a day preparing, and it takes you about a day afterward to recover. So between preparation, recovery, and then the procedure itself, you're losing about 2.5 days. That's a lot. It's an uncomfortable procedure. At least the preparation is uncomfortable. So I think people would certainly pay something to avoid it. So the non-monetary costs plus the monetary costs are fairly high, and if there's a low-cost alternative, that probably might make the practice of routine colonoscopy a little bit more questionable. So let me just summarize the main points here, that we really do need to make an analysis of benefits versus costs in order to decide whether medical protocols are correct or not. That is, something like routine colonoscopy, you do want to evaluate costs and benefits. People are talking about, for example, certain approaches to dealing with prostate cancer as not being cost-effective because prostate cancer proceeds so slowly that it is not necessarily cost-effective to take an aggressive approach to it. That's an example. But things that people haven't looked into are things like, how often should somebody be seen after a heart event? How often should they be followed up by cardiologists and so on? So there's this issue of cost effectiveness, is important in getting the economics of healthcare right. So that's the first thing, is that to get the economics right, you have to evaluate cost and benefit. And then we come to the issue that I pointed out in the summary, that to do that analysis, you have to, first of all, be able to attach a dollar value to the benefit of a procedure. And that also in turn will involve estimating the probability that the procedure will make a difference, probability the procedure will provide that benefit. And then finally, you can't ignore the fact that there may be alternatives to the procedure, and the alternatives, even if they're not as effective, if the alternative procedure is very inexpensive, then if you do the alternative inexpensive procedure on people, then the incremental benefit of the expensive procedure may not justify the cost. So you have to look at the dollar value of the benefit, estimate the probability the procedure will provide that benefit, and then compare alternatives in order to have the complete economic analysis.